This Travolta story is like the most wonderful, loving story ever. To say to someone, you've done it already, that's a pretty profound thought.
And everything's taken care of, so.
Nice. That's thoughtful.
You thought this was something you should do.
Yeah, because I didn't want my son to have to go through it, and I didn't want Stephanie to go through it.
Can I say something? That is the most loving thing you could do.
And says, we got to work on your act. He kicks everyone out of the room. And says, you're not, there are certain things you could be doing. He goes, your jokes are good, but I want to talk to you about owning the stage, your presentation. That is such a loving thing. What a hustle. It really is. And the other thing that I say, it's a romance between you two guys. Because the fact that you had an agent before Matt, and then you said to Matt, hey, Matt, I got an agent. Why don't you go talk to him? I want to share him with you. I got to tell you. You might not think that's a big deal. I think that's a big deal. I would be like, fuck Matt Damon. I do not want to. He's pretty good. I don't want to share my agent with him. I want my agent focused on me. I need some separation from this guy. That is the most loving thing you could do for another human being, to say, hey.
Really is.
And when I think about your early life, I thought that you would be the guy who would be filled with anger and resentment because you lost your mother at 14. I always say this, how are you so kind and loving and not bitter about that experience?
I'm a father of three daughters. And I, you know, when my babies were born, I love these. You know, you look at them and I get the chills thinking about how exciting it is, and they're learning and they're growing, and then they start to walk, and you're so in love with your child.
What I'm saying is the fact that you were too busy for the kids and other things was not...
I wasn't too busy for the kids. I spent lots of time with my kids. But when I needed to.
I mean, that's
when you wanted to.
Right.
And what happened?
Well, our relationship as a couple fizzled.
Where did that come from?
Yeah.
It happened from, like, it's just like the same. You've gone out with guys that, like, you're the boyfriend before Mr. X, where things for some reason go sour.
Yeah, it's because you're not there.
I know. Emily called me. She goes, Dad, I talked to the New York Post, and I don't know what happened to this article.
Right.
And I said, I go, it's all right. I read it. She goes, the headline was that my daughter's afraid to date. Meanwhile, she was just in a relationship. I don't know what. I said, what's that about? She goes, I don't even know.
So how did they get that?
I don't know. But my daughter is fantastic. My three daughters are fucking amazing. And I'm very blessed. I have such a great relationship with them. And I really do. And
welcome, ladies and gents, to QF, a podcast about Howard Stern. I'm your host, Fillmore, a.k.a. Jim Fix. And with me back in the saddle is Len Young. How are you, sir?
I'm good. It's good to be back. It's been a while.
Long while since we've last been able to record. Yeah.
And Bob. Yeah, sorry, go on.
No, Bob and Sam are going to be recording this weekend, I believe, if they haven't already. And we're trying to get back into the swing of things and get more people involved, because we were not available to record. So we're kind of catching up now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've been catching up on a few episodes myself, listening. And I was listening to some of the Wayne episodes. I've been really enjoying because of the, you know, the probably shared interest. But I was shocked to learn that there's a new Spinal Tap film coming out, which really sent a shiver down my spine. Never go back, you know. This is the problem. This is like a manager going back to a team that he once had success with, thinking the same thing's going to happen again. Lightning never strikes twice.
It rarely does. I know that I remember that Michael Palin and John Cleese, Jamie Lee Curtis and Kevin Klein went back and teamed up to do this film called Fierce Creatures.
That's right.
Long after Fish Called Wanda. And it was an exercise in futility. They just shouldn't have done it, because it was always going to be compared to Fish Called Wanda and unfavorably. And it's very rare. I mean, even the Python guys, when they get together and they do concerts, if it's a Q&A thing, there's nothing to live up to. But if they try to actually do sketches again, I think it's a disaster most of the time. Yeah. You're not. Yeah. It's just a different era. You can't capture, as you said, lightning in a bottle twice.
I remember arguing with somebody. This is when, remember the Ghostbusters all-female reboot they did? And I had a problem with it. And back then, I remember at the time, if you had an issue with it, it was almost like you hate women type thing.
Yeah, incel.
Yeah, yeah. And so I my point at the time was, and I still stand over it, which is they tried to remake it with the same cast, the same director, the same everything. And it was awful. Mm-hmm. And when you look back on a movie like that, and it's the same with Spinal Tap as well, the reason why that movie works is there's something there that you can't quite put your finger on, especially with Bill Murray's performance, and there's a spontaneity to it, and there's a way of just, there's something that you pick up on watching it that makes it fun. Some mm-hmm. of the ad-lib lines, and Spinal Tap is no different. Even though they had these set pieces that they'd pre-written with the oak closing over Derek Smalls on the stage and he can't get out of it and all these things, the Stonehenge, mm-hmm. all of it is ad-libbed in terms of, you know, the fine detail of the discussions and all that. And it's very hard to think that the same thing is going to happen again. And I think Wayne is right. They had an opportunity to maybe turn them into this kind of desperate, like a 80s Duran Duran or something like that. But yeah. No, they're sticking with the same. And they're just, I think they're just too old for it now.
I think so too. The Christopher Guest films, you know, they kept going until they, I don't think they, the last one, the For Your Consideration, I don't think was as good as the, what came before it. And musicians, movie stars, authors, they all have a funny thing that follows them, their past. And when they get to such a high point, it's almost impossible to recreate that or even to match it, let alone better it.
The problem with the Chris Guest movies, right, is that they just started great and they got progressively worse. And I think that one of the reasons for that is if you watch them, they all are identical in terms of the structure and so obviously this guy is very rigid in terms of how he views making a movie and how it's going to turn out and his planning around it. The last one they actually made was Mascots on Netflix. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, it was terrible. And they're just getting worse every time. I think Best in Show was probably the finest one. Or Waiting for Guffman. Yeah. Waiting for Guffman was great.
Waiting for Guffman gets, I think, a lot of people. But for me, Best in Show and A Mighty Wind was entertaining, but it wasn't good. Best in Show was fantastic. Fred Willard, he just stole that movie. Amazing. He was so good.
Did you hear Fred? Michael McKean was on Gilbert's podcast. And he told a story about Fred Willard, and he said that what Fred Willard does when he stays in a hotel is if he's anywhere near the lift where the bell sound is, he brings a toolkit with him. He's passed now, but he brought a toolkit with him and would disconnect the bell on the
on the elevator.
Yeah, this is something he did routinely. I mean, the guy, I think he was quite eccentric, but God, again, an example of somebody who just had it. He could just look at the camera and make you laugh. He was fantastic.
Completely. He's just I was thinking of comedy legends. He would be one. Definitely Bob Newhart, who still to this, even at whatever, he was on The Big Bang Theory as a guest star. And he was part of it is the acceptance over the years, the decades of Bob Newhart. He just gets that immediate sort of approval. But he's likable and he still got it. He's still got the feeling, you know, he's still got the funny bone and you can't turn that off.
Do you remember in Waiting for Guffman, there's a scene with Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara and they're going out and dinner, two couples. And you could tell it's all improvised because Catherine O'Hara is just has to put her head down because she's laughing. But he said, the guy says, Fred Willard says, you know, I had to go get corrective surgery once. I had what most guys dream of. And Eugene Levy's like, what are you talking about? He goes, penis reduction. And you could just see everyone their body's shaking, you know?
Yeah, they can't control it. Anyway, guys, Len and I decided ages ago we'd give the Dice Owing Artie $5,000 video run through. And I remember at the time specifically, I'll give the setup for those of you who may not remember. Basically, Dice made good with Howard again, came back on Sirius, did a long form interview, which was actually okay. It was interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, not from a human interest perspective, it was good. But then it just wasn't funny. And then when he came back, he progressively got a little bit funnier. I love when he brought Uncle Lee in, who was like almost a motivational speaker. Andrew, who else could calm you but me? Such a contrast. Anyway, but then he pushed Artie to do a gig with him where Artie opened for him, and then he was going to pay him $5,000. Now, the problem was Artie was making easily 10 times that amount on his own for a stand-up gig at that point. And Dice really could not sell out jack shit. Like, he was probably doing 500 seaters, 1,000 if he was lucky at that time. But when he got back to Stern, and when he was also doing ONA at the time, I believe, and unless he was feuding with them when he got back with Howard and vice versa. Either way, when Artie got involved and it was a serious event, they started booing Dice. They, you know, when he got up on stage, and I think it was all about. I mean, it was an Artie crowd. That was the thing. And you cannot. It's like going to an open air festival, and you know, AC/DC's playing at Lilith Fair or something like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not your crowd. And but he never paid Artie back, or he didn't pay him back immediately. And then Artie mentioned it on the air, and I think there was some bone of contention. Your theory was that Dice deliberately, this was something he did so that he could get more airtime.
I think it's possible that he did it purely just to get back on the air. But also, it's very hard to know this without getting inside his head and knowing him personally. But I think it's also possible that it was just a bit of him trying to assert a bit of control over the situation. I think when he went out and did that show, he realized, I'm yesterday's man, you know, mm-hmm. and this guy already is a bit of a hack, and he's now getting all the, you know, he's getting, making more money than me. He's got the crowd calling after him. And I think this was a way of maybe Dice just saying, trying to put Artie back in his box a little bit and just, you know, ruffle his feathers a bit. And of course he knew this is going to get me back on the air. And then maybe we can do another gig, you know, create a bit of buzz, create a bit of noise with the audience. Who knows?
My take was the same as the Will and Fred not giving him a wedding gift or, you know, selling him it's in the mail, that kind of thing. I think it was a similar situation that he wasn't actually going to pay him. He was going to wait for him to approach him with the money to see if he could get away with not paying him, just because he wanted to. I think he wanted to see, did he have the balls to come and collect it?
Yeah.
Like, is he going to, you know, it's just $5,000 and he's making all that money. Let's see if he'll even bother. Because if you don't ask, you don't get. Now, it's not a nice thing to think about someone that they're going to stiff you something that they promised you. But he does like to fuck with people. His opening ex, Jim Florentine, told us all about it. You're right. It might have been a power play. Like, let's see if you'll cross this line. And it's not a line. There's no real line. You're owed that money. But I think he wanted to test Artie's mettle, so to speak.
Yeah, it's I remember the first job I ever had. There was a guy when I walked in. He said, "Have you any odds?" And that meant, "Have you any change?" And I said, "Why?" And he goes, "I just gives a lend of £2 or whatever." And I did. And someone said to me, "He said you won't be getting that again. You'll be seeing that." And I said, "Oh no, I'll get it back." And I went back to him and. He just goes, "No, don't have it. And I eventually just gave up on it and said, "It's not worth pursuing this." But then a few weeks later, someone new started and he was straight over. "Do you have any odds?" And he got two. So everyone new that came in, he just took £2 off them. But it was almost his way of just asserting it. It was a bit like a cat pissing in the yard. You know what I mean? To kind of say, mm-hmm. this is my domain.
Yeah, absolutely. Funny you mention odds, because like there's a term in Newfoundland. They say what odds by, which means no big deal.
Okay. Yeah.
I have no idea. I used to think it meant what odds. What do you mean? What are the odds? What are the chances that, you know, like, and no, it's nothing to do with that. So again, lingo, Newfoundland lingo, guys, or as people say, Newfie, but don't say it to them. Ask them what they think of the term, because I've heard a lot of them, it is the N-word. Anyway, it literally is the N-word. Anyway, we're going to see how far we can get with this.
Yeah, he sold at
least eight or 900 seats there, and but okay, that's not Dice's fault. He offered you $5,000,
and I took it. Yeah, that's
but you're
no
just
problem.
Pissed that you haven't gotten it.
Absolutely, I just want to know when I'm getting the money.
All right, let me get to Dice. Dice probably has an explanation for all this. I'll let you guys work it out. Fair enough, because I know it's uncomfortable to do this in real life.
Sure.
Oh, it's not uncomfortable here at all.
I think it's less uncomfortable here. if it's sort of, you know, on the air. Hey, Dice.
Yeah, it's not uncomfortable. Good morning, soldier.
Dice, what happened here? You explain it. You talk to Artie. I'll stay out of it.
Okay, but I sort of need to know what did happen because I got oddball calls yesterday.
Right. Here's what happened.
So I'm not sure exactly.
Why didn't you tell him, Artie?
Well, nothing happened. I just said, Howard asked how the gig went. I said it was great. The crowd was great. I said Dice did a great job. But I haven't gotten paid for it yet. That's all. And I said, I'm just wondering when I'm getting paid.
Well, you were a little more.
I am mad about it.
All right. Number one. All right. If you're mad about it, that's okay. You know what I mean? That's not what the issue. Did you tell him?
Who cares if you're mad about it? By the way, guys, we should preface this. And we think you've already heard it in previous episodes, but Len and I both are addicted. James, too. We're all addicted to Dice's Instagram or his TikTok. They're both the same. They're identical. He has mastered the art form.
Yeah, it is. It is just, I was actually watching it this morning, just the latest one. It is that beautiful kind of example of just confusion and awkwardness. And it's I don't know where he got the idea from, but obviously the more he does it, the funnier it gets.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. Anyone who hasn't checked it out should really go on and check it out. They're very easy to digest. Each video is about 15 seconds.
Yeah, the longest you might find maybe 45 seconds, but even that's stretching. It's usually about under 30 seconds is the sweet spot. And you're right. It's his world and we're all just living in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is what that is exactly what that thing should be. It shouldn't be girls dancing in front of the Holocaust Memorial, you know, in the line. I'm not, honestly, there's people because of these fucking Instagram whores, they're all going like, you know, like selfies at Auschwitz and stuff like that. And I didn't see that when I was there, but I did see an Italian couple making out on the bus between Camp 1 and Camp 2. It didn't even affect them one iota. That's how off it was. Like they went to fucking Papa Pete's for a pepperoni or something.
It's like dabbing at ground zero.
Yeah. Jesus.
Before you got into that, how phenomenal the show was with us.
Yes, I did. Of course I did.
Not just me, with you.
What?
What do you mean?
Did you tell them how you did?
Yeah, I said we both did very well. It was great.
Just now you said Dice did a good job, like you were, you know, sort of judging my performance.
Well, he is judging your performance.
No, well, he asked me how to win.
Howard, I'm saying the reason we did this show, we wanted to see how we would be as a team together performing, and it, you know, I'm still raving about the show.
Well, Artie said that you were great. He was great. Okay. Artie did say probably that he was just as responsible for bringing in the crowd as you were.
Okay.
And he kind of was saying,
and as a free opening act, he was great.
Yeah. And he said, not only did I accept $5,000, but really, I didn't get any money for it. But Artie also said, I'm going to fill you in on everything, Dice, so you're not in the dark. Artie said, look, Artie headlines shows, and he has other comedians working for him. He pays them that night on the spot, and he makes sure it happens. There's no reason why Artie had to wait. Am I misquoting you, Artie?
No, that's exactly right.
No, it's okay. I'll go through it with you.
Okay, now, first off, this is the thing. I don't think for a minute I don't think there was any other motivation for Dice except this is a chance for me to hitch my wagon to someone who's hot and get my name back out there. As much as I love him, I think it was strictly business.
I think so. I would like to know, because this is in 2007. I would like, or is it, yeah, around
2006.
That, 2006. I would like to know exactly where his career was, because I do remember after this, it would have been he had a reality show and he was doing this whole I'm still the best back number one again, and he was playing these like shoeboxes, you know, compared to what he was in the 80s.
Well,
and he wasn't doing that well. This is because this is before he got all those acting gigs. Remember, he got the Woody Allen and Blue Jasmine and things.
That's right. That was all. That's like the 2010s is when they started getting some acting work again. And the Blue Jasmine thing opened up a shitload of work for him. So he started getting TV gigs and what have you. He was in Vinyl, the first episode of Vinyl, which only lasted a season or half a season. And he was great. He was actually like he was in the opening episode and he just was perfect. Mm-hmm. But no, what happened was, was his albums. I can tell everybody exactly how bad it went. So Day of the Laughter Died was 1990. 42 Long was 92. And at that point, he'd been eaten up and chewed up. He'd been chewed up and spit out by the press for the longest time. And so all of a sudden that comedy wasn't in vogue really anymore, so to speak. But also, you know, like a Flavor of the Month, he only had a shelf life of a few years where it was going to be that big. And then he had to, you know, either get another gig or hopefully get, like you said, acting work. But then so through the 90s, he released, you know, Day of the Laughter Died Part 2. Like 93, and it's awful. Like, it's not even, as a fan, I go, this, I understood what he was trying to do, the same thing, catch lightning in a bottle, like we said, yeah. But it didn't work. Like, it works as a bad album. It's Shulaji might be better. That's how bad it is.
Yeah. I don't know. I still can't get through Shulaji or, but yeah, The Day the Laughter Died is masterful though. When you listen to it.
Yeah,
it really is. It's great to listen to it. But yeah, I guess Dice's problem, though, he's not Jonathan Winters. That it's not that he can go on a show and his patter is evergreen, that he can just keep doing it. It was definitely of its time with the big shoulder pads and all of that kind of 80s excess, you know. Mm-hmm. And once you get into the 90s then and the way society, you know, culture shifts a little bit, he suddenly looked so past it and yesterday's man, you know. So
it was almost overnight it happened. It seemed like it, but so in the mid 90s he released, in 95 he had one that was an internet only thing called Filth. It's now on YouTube, of course, and it literally was three CDs of the dirtiest fucking shit you could imagine. It was almost like, let's take this to the nth degree of profanity and see how dirty we can get, and that's exactly what it was, and it really wasn't that funny at all. Then he did one in 2000 with this, he's not on Def Jam anymore, so, or Def American as it was, the Rick Rubin's label, and he released an album called Face Down, Ass Up. And it's just, it looks like a shitty Two Live Crew album cover, and there's, again, nothing funny about it. So he was in the nadir of his career, and then he was doing O&A in the early 2000s. He hooked into O&A because he couldn't get on Stern anymore.
That's some title for a Face. Yeah. That means they're not his childhood memoirs, I think.
Well, he did. Hold on. Let me see if I can find it. He did a series called Bless This House in 95. That's when he tried to tone down his image. And with Kathy Moriarty, who was in Raging Bull and the Mambo Kings. Yeah. And so he's basically going to play like Ralph Cramden. And I just remember one good line when it was determined, OK, they're going to have to, like, he and the wife are going to have to put up his mother. Like, and she goes, well, how long do we have to, you know, how long do we have to have her in the house? And he just kind of offhandedly saying, until she dies. And I love that. But here's one thing, if I can find it. Let's see if I can get it on YouTube. Because he always would crowbar certain impressions in. Let's see. Bless this house.
Dear Alice, I know we said no gifts, but I'm going to risk the shot in the head and give you one anyway. This is just something to let you know how much I love you. And whatever happens, or should I say whatever we step in, we can get through it together. From your hunka hunka Christmas, love, Barrett. P.S. Hit the boombox and brace yourself.
I'd like to say a special to you, baby. I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue just thinking about you.
So he's going to do all of his moves. Anyway, so I'm sure he had a lot of fun doing that kind of shit. Yeah. But again, he said he came back to Stern that year or the following year when it got canceled. And he said they tried to put a little edge in the character, and then they just kind of watered it down too much, and he wasn't happy with it. He's never been happy. Like you said, kind of like Rickles, he's never been captured well on any show.
No,
you know, and not as himself.
But what there was that time he went on CNN
and I love that.
And he just started swear like put play that. That's a, like what was the background to that? It to me it looked like complete self destruction.
Like, I don't remember the guy.
Was he just?
And now coming up, Art Carney.
Started a gym.
Segue.
Hold on. The guy says you started a gym, and he gets offended.
This was like I think 2000 or the early 2000s. Okay. He was on CNN just doing some. I can't. I think the guy got fired actually not long afterwards, and this might have been the episode that did it. So this was Dice's Joe Buck move.
Yeah.
So here we go.
Let's talk a little bit about where your career has been.
I can't even believe it.
You were a headline guy.
I'm still a headline guy. You know what I mean?
For a while you popped out, now you're coming back. You were running a gym. Tell us about that.
Running a gym?
Weren't you running a gym at some point?
You're supposed to be a news guy. Where are you getting your fucking
information? That's our research. You weren't?
This is ridiculous. I come on CNN and the guy don't even know what he's talking about. Go ahead.
You at no point were you running a gym?
No, running a gym.
What,
no,
you need to work out or something?
Jesus fucking Christ, with these guys. I come on the news for 2 seconds and you want to say, every time I do an interview, a guy wants to open his fucking mouth.
Thank you very much. We'll go back to talking about Art Carney. And we'll be back in just a moment. Fill you in on the Art.
So I don't know the context, actually, because he explained it on a later interview. And I just don't I don't know what he was there for to begin with. Like plugging a gig, I suppose.
It's really strange because he's in that, you know, 60 seconds, he literally just burnt any bridges of being on a news show ever again. I mean, he really did. I mean, he would have been escorted out of the building straight away and told, you know, he would never have been allowed near that place again.
You're on a public on CNN. Christ, they're getting FCC fines.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yin Yang for that kind of thing. This is pre Janet Jackson too. So, is it less cringeworthy than, Kathy Lee asking Marty Short why he's still, you know, how his marriage to his now dead wife has survived for so long? First time I saw that, my jaw dropped, and it was just unbelievable. Anyway,
I have no problem going through it with you, but I don't know why you didn't just call me. Because number one, I called up. No, this is what happened. Number one, I didn't tell him I'd pay him that night. I wait till I get paid, and then I send the checks out. Okay, so now what happened is I actually called you, Artie. I was in Florida, like I don't know, 4 or 5 days ago. And I actually left you another message going, call me up and leave me the address for your agent so I could send the check.
Artie, did that happen?
I never got that message.
So wait a minute. So yesterday, when I got all these calls, I just got back to L.A. Sunday night.
Artie, you calling Dice a liar?
Mm. Oh, no, I'm just saying, I don't know if something happened with the phone. I never got that message.
No, I left that message. You get 1,000 messages from me. That one you didn't get. But I'm telling you what I did. Yesterday, I did get to your agent, you know, and I said, give me your address.
That was yesterday.
I want to send the check out.
But, Dice, was that a reaction to Artie complaining on the air?
What bothers me, what bothers me, I've been trying to call Artie just for that information. You know, I didn't come home from Atlanta.
Artie's shaking his head that you're bullshitting.
No, I'm saying I never got that message.
Look, I got no reason to bullshit him. Number one, you know, what gets me crazier than everything is not the fact that you didn't get paid. I mean, I got no problem paying you. What bothers me more is that what I heard about that the show was half sold, so Artie was on the show.
That's true.
No,
what Artie said.
When I first went on Howard's show, that time, the time I asked you, you know, whatever it was, whatever day that was.
Right.
There were 200 seats left to be sold. By the time I was done with Howard's show, this is why I give you all that credit, Howard. The tickets were gone.
So you didn't really need Artie, is what you're saying.
Not for that show. If I would have went into the bigger room, and I'll tell you the truth, they were chanting for Artie to come out. I mean, you know, what's happened since I've come on your show is that, you know, I'm getting people that buy Sirius coming to the show.
Right.
Whether it's
now, so at least, okay, I give him credit for admitting that if he needed, he'd definitely need an opener if he had a bigger venue. But that's always been the way. I mean, back in the day, he used to open for rock bands, actually, Dice, which is a throwback to the old days in Vegas where crooners would have comedians open up for them all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was famously in Goodfellas. I always think of that. Wasn't that they had a comedian opening up for one of the guys? Do you remember that? Do you remember that scene in Goodfellas with the comedian? My wife says, take me somewhere I've never been. I tried the kitchen.
Oh, that was Jenny Youngman.
Yeah.
At the Copa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and so the idea that, you know, this Sirius XM thing, again, not Dice's crowd. And I think at that point, especially, people definitely had the opinion like he's done, he's over. It's been like 15 years since the Rhymes and, you know, and then maybe Sam Kinison, if he were alive, wouldn't age that well. I don't believe that's true because I've heard his the posthumous album. I think it's called Live from Hell. And it's great. He does topical stuff. He talks about JFK. He talks about that was my favorite bit, the JFK bit, the bill, like the war in Iraq. The smart bomb. I love that bit.
Yeah, brilliant. No, I think even though they both had their gimmicks, you know, obviously obviously we had the screaming, you know, you had the nursery rhymes and all that. But I think my memory's gone. Who the comedian we're just talking about?
It's Kinison.
Kinison, sorry. Jesus, sorry. Yeah, even with him, you had content there that was smart and just really well put together. When I think of him, the first thing I think of is the starving children.
Oh, you know? it's one of the best top 10 bits of all time.
I think so. Yeah. It is like listening to, you know, a great like John Coltrane or something. It's like one of the great, it really is. It's
just scream supreme.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Just remember, take that sandwich away. It doesn't work unless he looks hungry.
You see what this is? This is sand.
One of my favorite bits of his was just sort of like he used to change that bit every so often. But there's one where Craig Gass did a version of it where he's like, you know, not that bit, but the Jesus one where he goes, you know, he could heal. That's a bad one, you know. People, the sick will follow you wherever you go. You can't even take a piss. There's always some gut loser going, oh, Jesus, can you take a look at this? He goes, Jesus. And then he's got his image, like, he goes to the wall. He goes, yeah, I'll be out in a few minutes. Can you fucking wait a second?
Yeah, you see, I don't think Dice's material was ever as funny as that.
Never, yeah, never, as never much would, like it's, but it's different. It's a different type
it's
of comedy.
Different. I love that old. I think it's great. You know, I totally agree. It hasn't aged well, and I think Kinison's. I think Kinison's the riffs would age a lot better. The attitude and the opinion he had, but you could perfectly transpose that into. Can you imagine what he would say about people in 2024? You know,
oh, he'd have a field day.
Absolutely.
Bill Hicks alone, like the two of them together would just be unstoppable. Even then the third album, which was shit, Leader of the Band, which half of it is him doing rock stuff. And it's really just like covers and it's awful. Although the video that Sam did for Mississippi Queen is funny. He imitates Sinead O'Connor. the dancing, you know, with the dress on. Anyway, at one point he does that bit about the, you know, the drug war, the war against drugs. And he goes, the drug war, you know. He goes, what the fuck happens if you're captured? I guess, you know, you got to go to those drug war camps. He goes, oh, they beat us. They made us do their blow. Put me on the front lines.
Oh, God. Must go back and listen to it again.
It's that album's awful, but the first two were great. And the last one is great. The bit about JFK and the pee troughs in Vegas just fucking destroy me. How do I know there's not a guy at the other end of that pee trough going, oh, this is my dream?
Hicks had a great thing about JFK as well. He said, I think it was something to do with God. It started with God. And he said, you know, do you think if he ever comes back here, do you think he's ever going to see want to see a cross again? Yeah. He said, it's like
going up to Jackie with the rifle pendant.
Yeah. Just thinking of John, Jackie.
He was phenomenal, man. Yeah. Way too young.
Yeah. And whether it's in Florida, whether it's in Vegas, Atlantic City, all I wanted to do was finally team up with Artie because I heard about his performing ability. And, you know, team up like these guys do, the blue-collar guys, these guys. So, you know, people have been telling me about Artie, so I said, well, let's try this. Now, if we would have...
See, I'm going to be honest with you. Artie thinks...
No, but let me...
Can I tell you what Artie thinks?
Okay.
Because Artie's not man enough to tell you himself.
I don't understand what you... Artie told me something. Let me ask him about what he just said, though.
Okay.
So you say... Are you claiming that... Before I announced that I was going to be a part of the Borgata show, you had already sold it out.
No, I'm saying there were 200 tickets left to sell when I came on Stern's show.
And
that's what I'm saying.
And then
what I am saying, this I'll admit to, when we announced or you announced that you're going to do the show with me, I got calls to go into the bigger room. Let's open this up and go into the, they have a bigger room there, either that or add a second show. Because there were so many calls coming in, we could have done a second show, and that I would have given you a lot of credit for. And you know what? If we would have done that, I would have even gave a lot more money because you would have had a lot to do with that second show.
Okay, I get it. So that part I agree with. But when would I have gotten this money?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, maybe I'm going to change my mind a bit on this here because... Like Dice sounds like someone who is talking in circles, trying to eat up time here.
Big time.
Like he doesn't really have an answer at all. And maybe, just maybe, he was blindsided by this and he didn't expect it to go up on the air. And now he's suddenly kind of humming, trying to, because he's doing a great job here of deflecting and misdirecting and talking around, but he's not talking at all about the $5,000. He's talking about everything right. But.
That's right. Yeah. And truth be told, he was on the balls of his ass if career wise. I mean, he talked about having to, you know, gamble and doing blackjack in Vegas in order to make ends meet. But like he had a bad gambling addiction. He lost like millions of dollars on gambling. And he said, I won a bunch too. And da, da, da. Like, well, no, yeah, everybody talked about their wins, but he talked about his losses as well. And he probably needed that $5,000 more than people would think.
Well, let's just to borrow a line from Marty DeBurgi from Spinal Tap. Let's just say that his appeal had become more selective by 2006.
Great line.
Yeah, when is he getting his money?
Well, it's in a trust, Artie.
You know what I mean?
Dice has actually invested it for you. He's waiting to watch it grow.
Yeah, I didn't know he wanted a paper bag that night.
But Dice, come on. You work with comics. You get paid that night or the next day. I mean, come on.
The next day. I got to live my life. I got to get back to L.A. and take care of business. That's what happened.
Well, I got to live my life too.
That's bullshit. Yeah. Dice does not. He's not leaving a venue without his money.
100%. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but the opening acts, and truthfully, he'd probably pay like even lesser comics, like maybe $500 to open up for him, and he'd probably pay them himself, knowing he'll get the rest of the money that night or the following night.
It doesn't make sense. His story here doesn't make sense, which is, I got to sort my business out. Well, surely sorting your business out means getting money. Now, if you did get what, like it looks poor then if he got paid, but didn't make the phone call beforehand to say, I need this split into two. I need five for Artie and whatever the remainder for me.
Yeah.
So like, surely that's what would have happened, but it didn't. And then how long does it take for him once he gets home and sorts his business out? Like, what does that involve? Like,
well, yeah, it's like, what is it, coming by carrier pigeon? I mean, like the fucking Pony Express. The other thing is, it's not like you go to the Cheesecake Factory and tell them, listen, I'll have a whatever, you know, this and that. And I'll pay you when I get back to L.A. You know, I mean, he's a certain, whether it's a plumber, like you do that with a plumber or an electrician. Listen, and unless it's a family, like a neighborhood or a village, obviously, like I know, you know, barter system or y'all, I know you'll get me next week when payday comes or whatever. I get that. You're good for it. But yeah, he's never worked with Dice before, so he has no idea what's going on. So I guarantee, I'm firm in my belief that Dice tried to not pay him and see if he had the balls to ask for it.
This isn't like corporate life where you carry out work and then you have to invoice the company and they have to process the invoice and run it through, right, and send, you know, this is as close to cash in hand as it gets, but it's check in hand and that's it. Yeah. And that's why Dice is, I would say, on the back foot from the get-go here with this. But let's just hear what kind of creative reasoning and meandering we get here.
Oh, lots. And when Ralph calls in, Jesus.
What, couldn't you get out of town, Artie?
Look, you aren't depending on your life for the, you know, since you said it on the air, the $5,000 I gave you. And, you know.
You don't know that.
No. Well, yeah.
Artie bets heavily.
But what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah, Artie's exactly. Absolutely right there.
Yes.
Yeah.
I hate that. I hate when people think
counting other people's money.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's distasteful to say the least. And, you know, you should always be taking care of business no matter what. I mean, TCB, baby, you know, you've got to, I remember it was it's a story in, the Elvis, the Memphis Mafia book that I reference every so often. Elvis was always like, when someone wanted to borrow money from Elvis, they'd ask him to see him privately because Elvis was always he always had this attitude, like he knew what was coming and he didn't, you know, he's like, oh god, you know, he loved giving stuff, he hated being asked to,
right.
he was very generous to a fault, but he understood giving away rings and cars and stuff and not cash. So but what happened was Marty, his employee, said, look, you know, last year when you gave me money for blah blah blah, I've saved up a lot, I've been working on the railroad, and here's 300 of the whatever you gave me, I'll pay the rest as soon as I can. And Elvis was like, he had tears in his eyes afterwards and said, you don't know what this means to me, like no one's ever paid me back.
Wow.
And then he said, forget it, keep it. Like he said keep it, like you need it more than I do, and it just the thought that you even considered, you know, paying me back means more than the actual money, and you know, if you don't, I'll burn it anyway, so keep it, you know.
One of my favorite Elvis stories was and it was so funny when I read it, cuz the article itself was about food, it was about Elvis's diet and all this, and one of the stories was that he got a sandwich one time in like Denver or somewhere that was called Fool's Gold, right? So it was basically he flew there
for a peanut butter and sandwich.
Yeah. So he chartered the plane, right, to buy this massive sandwich that would, you know, like no wonder the guy died at 44 or whatever it was. But what made me laugh thinking about it afterwards was, he must have been out of his, I'd say he was off his mash when he did that. He must have been like, that's the type of thing that someone does when they're up like 5 o'clock in the morning, just doing, you know, loads of drugs, and they go, let's just, like, there's no way he was in a clear state of mind when he decided to charter a plane to buy a sandwich.
You mentioned that picture of Elvis with Nixon meeting him in the White House, and he looks like a vampire.
He looks like he's been up all night. He's totally fucked at that stage.
Well, those guys said there was a year or I think where he ate the same exact meal three times a day, like not this one meal three times a day, but the same breakfast, lunch and dinner was the same for like a year.
What was like, it, I wonder?
I don't remember, but it would, like, he said he liked the bacon fried so hard you couldn't, no, he liked the egg fried so hard you couldn't drive a nail through it. It was all like Southern food and stuff, you know, like whatever. But, and, you know, it wasn't quite Zappa's burnt weenie sandwich, but it was, you know, a lot of, he loved soul food, basically.
He used to eat over 30 yogurts a day at one point.
Yogurts?
Yeah, he used to love eating yogurts, apparently, in the jungle room.
Interesting.
I was in
maybe
his house.
Maybe as a weight loss like thing during his fatter years, obviously.
Yeah, that's kind of maybe that's the way. Maybe they were low fat, you know, and he thought maybe if I eat loads of them, I'll lose weight. But I was in Graceland and I kept staring at the kitchen. I was just looking around at all the, now it's obviously all cleaned up, polished, like, but I was looking at it just thinking, God, all this stuff was made here. All that stuff that, you know, blocked up his ass.
My favorite is they still got one of the TVs he shot out is in there still.
I got a TCB lighter in the gift shop in and I fucking lost it, and I, it was back when I smoked, I was a Zippo, you know, and I lost it, but they had over there, they had Elvis coffee, and I was going to get, I should have bought all this stuff and brought it back, but I just thought they missed an opportunity there, like, because they could have tied it in with constipation, like
coffee enemas.
Coffee, yeah, something. You know, this will get you moving.
He was big on Fleet enemas back in the day because the drugs made him so constipated, and he was in such great pain at one point they had to take him to the emergency room. The doctor said it's trapped gas. It's an unborn fart.
We're gonna need a cesarean.
Yeah, I mean, after certain operations, they it takes a while to get you to fart, and they're like counting down the days. Did you fart yet? Did you fart yet? Poor Elvis was like that, except no surgery.
It is sad because he was, when you watch him, he was there with all that trapped gas inside him, and then he was wearing a corset. That mustn't have been comfortable. And then while he's wearing all this, with all this controlled chaos inside his body, he's trying to knock out American Trilogy. The poor bastard.
Lamar said, Jesus, look at the size of him. If he puts on that jumpsuit and it busts, he's going to kill the first three rows from shrapnel.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's like a bomb going off. Poor Elvis.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, look, he was, God, Lord rest him, he was... He was arguably the greatest.
Yeah, he was great.
Loved him.
It's my money.
I know it's your money, but, you know, I got to come back and take... When I come back out of town, the first thing I do is take care of everybody that's with me on the road and have all the checks sent out. I run it like a business. I'm not getting in my car and running to a...
Divvying up cash?
Away. I'm all over the country.
How do you do it, Artie, when you have comics working for you?
You can ask anybody who's ever worked for me. That I either tell the guy who's promoting the gig, I say, listen, you got to cut this guy a check for this amount, me a check for this amount. If they have a problem with that, I make sure that night, the comic gets a check.
All right.
Either from my account, if I get the full amount, or from the guy.
It's your fault that you didn't say dice. Can I get paid that night? I didn't know you expected to get paid that night.
For fuck's sake. I know. I'm telling you, he pocketed the entire thing because he probably was in fucking arrears or something and needed the full amount.
I'm starting to think that way now. Because I listened to this. I haven't heard this in a while, but... My initial reaction was that this was a kind of a stage to get on the air, but there's something about the way he's talking. There's a little bit of certainly desperation, and he's just trying to obfuscate and dance around and not really answer it directly. I think you're right. I think he could have been, like you say, on the balls of his ass. Mm-hmm. And it's sad, really. It's sad to think, but I think you could be right.
Well, yeah, and he, of course, he had been through like his second divorce, second divorce at that time, and like he's like Kevin Costner or John Cleese, who's going on what do you call it, the attorney tour or something like that, or the because he had so many awful divorces, he's completely fucking broke, and he's had to go out and perform constantly at age whatever 80 or something, and 81, 82, and it's just, you know, you never want to be in that situation if you can help it.
This may be a lazy generalization, but I find, you know, if you're looking at a man who's in his who's on his fourth or fifth marriage, it's a high likely chance that he's just an asshole. I really do believe that.
Five women thought they could change him.
Yes.
They realized it's like hacking down a redwood with a toothbrush. It's just not going to fucking happen. So anyway, we'll continue with the dancing around.
I guess, you know, that, I guess it's my fault that I didn't specify. But it's 10 days later and I don't have the check.
Well, call your agent. I spoke to
him. I called my agent 20 times this week.
Did you talk to him yesterday?
Dice, I talked to him. I had to go to Pittsburgh after we worked together. Okay. And I called him and I said, Dice didn't pay me. He said, I'll call Dice's agent. He started calling your agent a week ago. Your agent said, I don't know anything about this. Dice is on the road. I can't get him. And I said, well, as of right now, I haven't gotten paid.
The thing is that I was on the road.
Dice, what does that have to do with anything that you were on the road? I mean, I got to wait for you to get off the road to get $5,000?
And I'm not like, no, when I come home, I take care of business. What's...
Yeah, okay. And that's obviously two people in two vastly different ways of doing business. Like I said, it makes more sense that he had to take the whole wad, do something with it, and then kept working, obviously, and is using. It's almost like a pyramid scam. You're paying Peter, you're paying Peter to pay Paul, or whatever the fuck, however it goes.
Yeah, which fire is burning the hardest? And I'll put that one out first, and I'll take the damage on the other ones, you know, because that's more preferable. I think also consider this is 2006, so we didn't have smartphones, but we had mobile email, we had text messages, we got all these ways of communicating that we didn't have in the 1970s. So this whole idea of 10 days and phone calls and letters and no, this is, if you have an agent, they all have email addresses in 2006. So there's
And at the very least, the agent, you tell the agent to tell his agent, Dice is going on the road, whatever, you will get the check by such and such a date. Even though at least there's the communication. It's no different than when Artie loaned money to all kinds of people, and then like Dan the Song Parody Man, and then the Poon Hound, and didn't get it back until he didn't say he had done it. Dan got guilty on the air and said, okay, I owe Artie some money, and like Gary's like, we weren't talking about you, because he had loaned money to probably Cabby and maybe KC as well. I remember. Gary goes, I loaned money to one guy. He's like waiting for a big windfall. And he goes, the weatherman who's predicting these windfalls is really wrong. But like I owe a buddy, a buddy owes me rather from last August. I gave him a little bit to float him until he got his head above water. And but I didn't know he'd also borrowed like thousands off of some friends. So when I saw him in the summertime, I just told him, he goes, look, I'm working, da, 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 I can pay you back such and such in a month or two. I said, fuck me. Go pay the other people you owe first. That's the priority. I know you're good for it. You're not going to welch. But it's been almost a year later and I haven't seen anything. We're still keeping in touch. But I also knew that was an amount that I could afford to lose if he decides, oh, I can't. I'll forget all about it. And then I learned, don't give that guy any money.
Yeah, but the outcome of that is the money isn't for you essentially the important thing, but you will never look at him quite the same way again.
No way. Not if I don't see it again. No. And it depends. Like if I know that he's in some awful like medical emergency or something, of course I'll, but I don't. The other thing is I didn't want to, at the time I was hesitant because I go, you're already in a hole and if by giving you a little bit of money, I'm only helping you short term, what are you doing to make this better for yourself without me and without the other people helping you out? And at any rate, with Artie, I get his perspective. It's like, I'm not hearing anything. I don't see any money. And ultimately, the real thing is he feels if it wasn't for me, Dice doesn't sell out that fucking thing. Yes. And I should be getting a hell of a lot more money. That the basis of it is really more about that than the $5,000. That's just the icing on the shit cake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when are you getting home so we could get that? Let me know.
He's never going home again.
I mean, now you're starting to piss me off. I mean, I want you to call me a bull. You never call me this week, ever. I never got a fucking phone call from you.
Now you call me a liar because I did leave.
I'm not calling you a liar. All I'm saying is maybe my phone fucked up. I didn't get a phone message from you.
I'm calling you a liar. What I'm saying is I called you and said I need your agent's address to send the check.
Never got that message. I gave you, remember after the Borgata, we were sitting in your dressing room. You said write down your corporation's name and your agent's name. I handed you that piece of paper that night thinking, okay, maybe I'll get it, Monday. It's a Friday night.
I didn't know you needed it. And if you would have said, you want to know, if you would have actually told me, can I just get paid that night in advance, I would have had a check cut for you just to give you there.
Artie's saying it's just embarrassing to say that. He thinks he's supposed to just know that.
No.
Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying, what does it matter if I need the money or not?
He's right. He's absolutely right. Yeah, it's not. It's a non-point. Dice was. Yeah, he's bullshitting.
I think so. And if a loan has qualifiers on it, you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yes, but, absolutely.
You know, a loan is a loan, and you pay back when you say you will, and you can't come back and say, well, you don't really need it this week, do you? I mean, you could get it next. You know, then suddenly you're into very murky waters with someone.
It's a whole can of worms. Yeah.
But I think like you already said often, or, you know, we've said before on this show is that, you know, desperation and that's associated with addiction, all these type of things does make someone do things that are morally reprehensible. And I think maybe that's what we're seeing here. Maybe Dice was in really, really precarious waters financially. Mm-hmm. And he had to do this. And this is his way of trying to some way limit the damage and save face. But he's, like you said, he hasn't really got a leg to stand on.
No, and then people are going to go after Artie. Like some people are going to call in and say, what are you doing? Like, honestly, you don't need that money. You're doing all right, whatever. And again, they're missing the point. Then Ralph calls in. When Ralph calls in, that's the worst, because Artie knows this guy is good for nothing except, you know, cornholing Howard and making him look like, an extra in an Avril Lavigne video. And then all of a sudden... and also just to be a contrarian, which is, I can be like that in my life too, but I stopped being like that when I was, I don't know, when I got to my 20s.
I think Ralph was a contrarian, but I think also Ralph would do things that he felt may have been self-serving always. And in this situation, anything that normalizes Ralph's disgraceful behavior, he will try to get behind. And this is something that Ralph would try to normalize, which is borrowing money, not paying it back, talking in circles, just being a shitty person. So he can identify with this. So he's immediately going to side with Dice.
Right. Listen, Charles Manson had issues too, guys. Come on. No need to jail him.
Needing the money, I just... take care of it.
He's saying he waits.
All over. You had to drive 10 minutes to go do your gig. I went to a few different cities. I come home. I'm going to cut. The check's been cut already because now tell me you didn't talk to your agent yesterday.
I did. I'm admitting to that. I talked to him yesterday.
Say that I'm sending the check.
He left me a message and said, I talked to Dice, call me back. I didn't get a chance.
But that's what the call was about. What do you think it was? I want to go out with the guy?
Dice, it's still 10 days later.
Okay, so what do you want, a bonus?
No, I want my money. I don't want a bonus. I want the money we agreed to.
Why can't we get past this? Why is it always about money? You're the one that even said to me before the gig, I don't even care if I get paid. And I said, no, I got to pay you.
Dice, when did you get paid for the Borgata gig?
They gave me a check, half the check that night.
Okay, so you couldn't give them half $250 to $2,500 that night? Yeah, like this is one of the things when I'm just curious, anybody else out there that, like, when you got done a job for someone, you know, what's it been like for you guys? But so any QFers out there freelancing, like you're doing your own like renovations or you do, you know, landscaping, if you do any blue collar work, and let us know how it works for you in the comments section, because as far as I'm concerned, whenever a job was needed to be done, like moving, for example, helping a friend move, even if a friend wouldn't accept money, I always I'm not like that. I always find a way to put the fucking money somewhere in their jacket or something. Like, I'm the guy that goes off to the bathroom and pays the bill for the fucking dinner before people have a chance to do anything. Like, cause I don't, if I say I'm paying for something, I'm paying for it. I don't like anybody getting in the middle of that. And maybe to a fault sometimes generosity, but, I mean, we know people who are down on their luck all the time, but Jesus Christ, you feel like shit until you've paid that person back.
Yeah. We had work done here in the house a couple of years ago. It was a big enough job. We got the entire loft converted and got a bathroom up there, and you know, so it could be a master bedroom or whatever. And mm-hmm. We had to take half the roof off, and you know, there was a lot in it. And the guy doing it is well known in the area. He's probably, I'm not going to say where he's from, but anyway, he's, because I don't identify him, but basically quoted me a price. And then in the meantime, after the quote, the war broke out in Ukraine and prices all went up by 20% for materials.
Okay.
So by the time he carried out the work, he said, I'll stick to the price, but I'm going to need some cash. And every week he would call over and I would give him an envelope. Now, that was on a weekly basis. So he wanted to be paid weekly for the, so a week work done and then paid. And then it mm-hmm. went like that every week. So there was no, now it was all, I probably shouldn't be saying this, but it was kind of off the books.
Well, no, it happens all the time.
He did a great job. Yeah. And we stuck to his price. So everyone was happy, apart from the revenue.
Well, yeah. Well, why, mommy, why are you baking a nail file in the cake for daddy?
I hope this isn't like, soon. Yeah, I feel like Cabby mentioned my Gulf War syndrome now. But,
okay. And where'd you get the other half?
Now, I didn't send the check till yesterday, because I came home Sunday.
So how is that my problem?
No, it's not your problem. So I send the check.
Now when I hear that, I'm hearing the phony phone call. Yeah. Fuck off, Ralph.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Back to the accountant. I call the accountant. I give him your agent's number, and I say, cut the check, since I don't know why you talk about what you make on the air. It's stupid. But I told him, cut the check for Artie and send it to him. That's it.
All right, well, so, I'll let you know when I get the check.
Are you saying that Dice could have made that same phone call from the road, Artie?
I guess there's a lot of ways of getting in touch with people nowadays.
Howard, number one, I never worked with the guy before, right?
Right.
So I'm thinking, you know, I wasn't thinking anyway. If he wanted to check that night, that's all he would have had to say. And I would have taken care of it in advance of leaving L.A.
Actually, I think.
But then he still wouldn't have got the check that night, the way you're saying it.
It's he's just getting tied up in minutiae. And, you know, there's no, if there was a genuine reason going on here, there'd be a very simple and short explanation for it. And he's just go running through hoops, and you can hear he's trying to, as he's talking here, push Artie to try and, I suppose, like a skilled barrister would, mm-hmm. pick apart Artie's reasoning and try to find a hole in it, and then put a, you know, drive a wedge into that and just exploit it. And you could, you know, so he's asking Artie questions all the time as well. But the more I listen to this, the more I think he's kind of panicked a little bit here, trying to come up with a.
Well, yeah, because I think he also sees his any future sort of partnership, as he wants to call it, with Artie going up in smoke because of this issue. And certainly when people have issues with money, which is really always a problematic thing with even family, you know, then a lot of times it's unsurmountable for a lot of people.
But you've known people, like I've known people in my life who are, they have a degree of charm, they can be funny, they're gregarious, and you like, you know, spending time with them, but then they'll do something and you'll suddenly just feel a bit uncomfortable. And I've known people like that. I think Howard felt like that with Dice. I think Howard felt, I can't really control this guy. I can't dominate him at all. And I'm just going to, he's too much of a liability to me because he's going to turn the tables on me and he's smarter than me. And I think, I think Dice strikes me as that type of person who he is highly competitive. He is a street fighting kind of attitude on him. And he's also street smart and he could run rings around you. Now, he's not doing a great job here, but I think generally he could.
I mean, and you mentioned the show, that the reality show. He did a reality show ages ago before, like it was 2006. It was like, you know, meant to show his comeback, and it was a disaster. I mean, he ended up playing like a 1,000-seater or whatever, and they tried to make it look like it was Madison Square Garden, but it did, obviously was a small place. Then they did another one on, I think it was HBO, but I think it was. And Adrian Brody showed up for one episode where he was supposed to mimic Dice. And then they just started hanging out together and he became Dice more than Dice himself. So he started trying to horn in on his girlfriend and, you know, and it was actually kind of, you know, a little meta, but I thought it was quite funny for at parts.
The show I remember was called Dice Undisputed.
Undisputed. It was awful.
It was awful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I think it's worth mentioning, just in case anyone thinks that I'm kind of shitting on Dice. One thing I would say about him is, okay, his Instagram, which is current, is incredible, right? But also, if you look at his kids, right, everything I've read about his kids or hear about him, that they're really well-adjusted, mannerly, nice kids. And that's a real testament to him as well.
I think so.
From what I can see, he's a great parent.
Well, yes.
And that's... So, but what I would say is just don't give them advice about money.
No, God, no. Jesus Christ.
I think this is Dice giving Artie a little more credit. He doesn't think Artie's desperate for $5,000. So he's taking his time. He's getting home. He's going to...
Why should that matter? I mean, Howard's not desperate for his paycheck coming next week.
I just expect it on time.
Exactly.
What are you going to get me? It's freaking 6 in the morning here. What are you going to get me mad
for? That freaking tattoo. Red sleeve.
Look at that. He has the shirt pulled up as well so all the audience can see.
Exactly. Fucking idiot. Christ. Bustara.
For nothing.
Well, for $5,000.
I'm trying to team us up to do giant things, and you're, you know, for the $5,000. How's that? That makes you sound bad.
No, it doesn't make me sound bad, Dice. It doesn't make me want to work with you again if I got to wait fucking 2 months for my money.
Oh, my God.
What do you want me to tell you? If you want to do what you're doing, then do what you're doing. We teamed up to do big things together, right?
Did you two have a talk?
Oh man, that's only going to make Artie even angrier because he knows you don't need you need me, not the other way around, buddy. Yeah. And yes, you are a way better comic than I'll ever be, but not right now at this moment in time.
Yeah, this is another one of Dice's angles to deflect you, which is, you know, look, think of the big picture. Why are you always thinking about money? Life is more, money doesn't matter. It's about your craft. It's about leaving a legacy. It's about doing great things together. Meanwhile, Dice is taking all the money and he's panicked because, you know, literally money was everything in this. Money is everything here.
Oh, yeah.
For both parties.
What?
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. I don't know if Artie wants me to bring that up.
Right. Did you have any kind of conversation?
Artie doesn't want to tell. Dice wants to team up with Artie. And Artie thinks the reason that Dice really wants to team up is he really wants me involved. Uh-huh. And Dice's way to get involved with me is through Artie.
Uh-huh.
No, that's not...
But Artie's afraid to say that.
That's without question what's going on. Come on.
Oh, really?
No, wait a minute. No, Howard, please. I come on your show, I announce a show, when you say, you know, you got something to plug.
You bet. Anytime you want.
The show sells out, right?
That's right. Anytime you want.
But who says why it's happening?
I don't say anything.
No, I say why it's happening.
Yeah, no, it has nothing to do with getting close to Howard, although Dice is very... Well, he became very adept at trying to keep all of his ducks in a row and make sure he could get on every show he could for promotion. Mm. But it was all about being in proximity to Artie. If you're with Artie and Artie's on the show, then you don't need to get close to Howard. And he knows he was never going to get back in close with Howard after, you know, calling him all kinds of shit and getting back, you know. He didn't care. It's more about the gigs. As long as he can have money coming in at these gigs, Dice is more, he's happier than a pig in shit.
Well, yeah. And I think, you know, Dice probably realized by this stage, like you said earlier, that all these other avenues hadn't worked out. TV hadn't worked out. Movies, there was nothing on the horizon. And shows were the only way he was going to get money in. And he wasn't a big a draw. He was, as he thought he was. So this was the only way he was going to get money. And again, that speaks to what we're thinking here the whole time, which is he was desperate for money.
Yep.
And that's why he took the $5,000.
Yep, absolutely.
I don't know. Artie feels he can go do these shows himself.
Here's my thing, Dice.
Let me hear what Artie has to say.
The room we played at the Borgata last week.
Okay.
I'm doing a show, two shows there, August 25th and 26th, by myself.
Okay. Do you?
And they're both going to sell. They'll both sell out in about 4 or 5 days, and I'll make probably 11 times what I made with you there.
Okay.
Now, why would I want to do work with you when I don't need it? Why would you want to work with me?
Know.
You don't give a. You never saw me do stand-up. It's not about the fact that you like the fact that I'm a comedian. I'm on the greatest show ever that can put people in seats. And, you know, you want to get those plugs. So it's almost like you're patronizing me, like, oh, you're a great comic. I want to work with you. No, you want to get plugs on a Howard Stern show, which.
Yeah, that's definitely a part of it. There's no question. It's business.
What high-profile comic has ever thought that Artie was really good? Well, like, I don't think any of his peers probably rated him at all. I think they probably looked at him and went, look, great storyteller, great on the air.
Funny, witty.
Yeah. But his stand-up is hack, and he is only playing Carnegie Hall because of his radio persona.
Yes.
I'd say a lot of them.
And Artie, I think Artie, well, after the drugs took over, when he started comparing himself to Richard Pryor, that was the nadir, really. But I think if you asked him honestly, and he'll say it himself, you know, it's self-deprecating, but I think he does believe it. He goes, it was a Greg Fitzsimmons interview where he said, look, maybe I'll just be a hack the rest of my life. It's better than, you know, driving a taxi, you know, making money doing comedy, but being a hack the rest of my life. I think driving a taxi might be slightly better than, you know, being Shuley, for example. But it is like, if you're successful, you're making money. Well, then you don't give a fuck if your jokes are original or not. You just want to get paid. But I agree. I think amongst his peers, and he would probably tell you the same thing, the money he was getting for these gigs is the money that a Dave Attell should be getting in terms of brilliance.
Yes, yes.
You know,
and like, yeah, I think you're right. I think there are different levels of hackery. You know what I mean? You can be a very successful hack, and there's been many of them. Who was that guy? Who was that guy? The guy from the South used to say, "Get her done." Who was that?
Larry the Cable.
Yeah, like people like that. You know, these were guys, but he was selling out arenas with catchphrases and all that, and you know, but then you have Shuley sitting there in his fucking place in Alabama, and he's sitting there in his sordid little grief hole basement, making fun of some guy who's, you know, far more on the balls of his ass than Dice is here. So there's different levels to desperation, I think.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, and the Shuley Network guys, 491, I think, paying customers now, paying patrons. So I was off when they said 500 by August, but I knew where the trend was leading to. So, you know,
Can we get a live ticker for the
it's like the reverse of the Jerry Lewis telethon.
Yeah.
And at the end, we'll all go, "You'll never walk alone." We'll sing, "You'll never walk alone." Did you ever see the SCTV sketch, the Jerry, like Martin Short doing Jerry Lewis live on the Champs-Élysées?
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, fuck. And at the end, the piano guy fucks up and he goes, "Louis, that's the cue." And then he fucks and screams at him for not getting it right. "When I do the cry, you do the cue. Cry, cue. You like your job? Do it."
There's something amazing about that, because when you watch that, you think, oh, that's just a comedy show, and that's, you know, but there's footage of things like that really happening. And like, that's quite well observed. And I always think of the Casey Kasem. I mean, the greatest audio I've ever heard in my life, when he's there going, "And here we have a song about a dog," you know, and then he's just like, "Dog, you come out of those goddamn high tempo, you know."
Oh, yeah.
I have to talk about a fucking dog dying.
Those are the best clips. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing.
Like I played some of the Ernie Anderson clip with C.A. Thompson on the show. And I mean, America's Funniest People was not was an international hit. I know in Canada we saw it as well. I'm sure most countries had their own regional version of that, but to hear him go like, "I'll read whatever fucking dick fuck thing you want."
This is a guy famous for network broadcasting, you know, and you to hear him swearing. It's just like that. I think I said it before. Dick Cavett was talking about, he was on an elevator with Jack Benny, and you know, you gotta go with Google to get these references, guys. But all the people got on there and they asked them the same questions, you know, are you really that cheap? You know, are you bad at playing the violin? You know, why don't you pay Rochester? Da, da, da. And then they all filed out. Dick said, you know, Mr. Benny, it must get, you know, really frustrating so many years hearing the same questions. He imitated Jack Benny. He goes, you know, kid, and he put his hand on my shoulder and said, you know, kid, sometimes you just want to tell them to go fuck themselves. Jack Benny, a guy who worked clean.
Yeah, no, and Jack Benny was also the kind of, he traded off the nice guy thing, you know, he really did. And his reputation was for being a nice guy. I wasn't sleeping well, and I'd wake up in the middle of the night. I went onto YouTube and they have a load of the Jack Benny shows from the 40s, the radio show. And I started listening. I got listened to loads of them. And he had that kind of, he had his valet driver, the black guy,
Rochester.
Yeah. And he had, so I started listening to loads of them. And, it, you know what? Some of it's great and it's aged quite well. And obviously, it's, you have those ads for Jell-O and all. Yeah. You know, but it's really, really great to listen to all those old things. And definitely a golden age compared to where we are now, I think, for, you know, in terms of radio and the, what do they call it? The theater of the mind.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you've seen it. Mel Blanc went on with him on The Tonight Show. And one clip where he goes, can you do an English horse? Very rarely you see Carson lose it outright. And he was, you know, but he was a magician when he started and then started doing comedy. But he had such an appreciation for voice talents because he loved radio. He loved radio guys. And Jack Benny, God, that fucking the Mexican sketch.
That's just great.
A classic. Yeah.
It really is.
I totally get it.
So you don't think working with me? Okay, so you're the greatest comic ever.
No, Dice. The reason I work with you was because you're an icon. You're one of my heroes. The reason I did this is because, look, it's not, and this is why I told Howard. Howard thinks I should ask for more money. I'm like, no, it's not about the money. It's about the fact that I'm getting to work with a guy who is a true icon. Right, he's a legend. And it was something I could tell my kids one day. I opened up for Dice, but teaming up with you, why don't we just go make our own money ourselves? You know, why do we got to team up together?
You don't think it could benefit you and us as a team teaming up together and doing giant places? You don't think that's strong?
I'd rather work by myself.
But if that's what you want to do, that's up to you. I heard when I started doing Howard, my attendance record went up immediately. He gave me an outlet. It's going great between us. He gave me my own show to do. My attendance at my shows have gone up, I don't know, 80% since I went on Howard.
And no one knows that.
Okay, so he's at least adroit enough to just admit that that he definitely got a bump. When in 2000 he tried to do Madison Square Garden again, he did, but it was the year of the Subway Series. The Yankees were playing the Mets in the World Series, and he blamed like lower ticket sales because of that. But he still sold something like 10,000 seats at Madison Square Garden after a long, long hiatus, and he said it was due to really plugging on O&A.
Right. Okay.
And being in studio and, you know, just riffing with them the way they would have all kinds of comics and stuff. And had he been able to get on Stern, he would have probably filled the place up as well.
Yeah. If he was bad, you know what Howard's like, if there were anyone was bad mouthing him, he would probably, and he probably, Howard would know he needs me for these gigs. So I'm going to cut that off. But yeah, I think O&A would have been on Terrestrial then, would they? Because They started with XM when it launched, I think, or soon after, which would have been 2002, 2003, I think.
I think 2004 they finally started at XM, but they had that hiatus with a couple of years where they couldn't. They were just being paid to sit at home, basically. And
they're on gardening leave, because they the cathedral stunt or something, was it?
That's right.
And so Dice was definitely like, if that was gone, then where am I going to fucking promote? You know,
I think, yeah, it's like already saying I wanted to work with an eye. Like I understand that, but it's not, he's not the same guy he was. And, you know, it's not the same thing. It's a bit like me saying I'd love to go and see Paul Di'Anno live. You know what I mean? But it's not 1980 anymore. He's in a fucking wheelchair now. You know what I mean? It's not the same thing.
Well, so,
Like never meet your, never work with your heroes.
What's your take on those legends matches where, you know, all the football, the old timers get together? To me, I think it is kind of, it strikes an emotional chord. What I'm talking about, guys, is when it's like old timers hockey, like when all the veterans come together and they play like a charity game, and it's, you know, but it's same with football, American European football, where all the, you know, they'll put together, you know, a Liverpool, you know, XL versus, you know, the Liverpool 11 versus, you know, Inter Milan legends, you know, and the money's going to such and such. And if you're not going for like some brilliant game, you're actually going to see some of these guys to see what they look like. And also because maybe you never got to see them in the first place. And maybe there's a bit of magic still within those legs sometimes.
I would say that I think if you watch someone like Zidane, even now, if you were to see someone like Zidane playing five-a-side in an indoor, he would just be spectacular. And the reason why a lot of the guys, well, all of them have to retire, is not because they're losing skill at all. And they're not losing their mind in terms of their football mind, any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's because the body is breaking down. They don't physically able to keep going. They can't run as fast. So they're losing speed. They're not losing the skill. They're not losing a lot of these things. So if you go and watch guys in their late 40s, early 50s, as long as they're all at the same level, right, I think you can see really good stuff, because you can see them still show a bit of the skill they used to have. Now, they're not as sharp, whatever, but they still have the mind. The one thing I would say that was really sad I saw one time was Gazza playing in a match, and he couldn't even kick the ball. Now, he probably had a few beforehand, maybe, which is even more depressing, you know. But so I think there is a fine line there. But I would love to see some of the – I remember, like – Jan Malby, seeing him play one of these games, and he was as big, like he had a belly, a proper big belly, right? But he was still able to play a crossfield pass, like 80 yards, pinpoint accuracy, you know what I mean?
That's what I find amazing. There was a Greek midfielder, Yorgos Karagounis. He played for all kinds of teams. And by the end, I think he played for Fulham, I think the last year of his career, and he scored a couple bangers. He's the one guy who's now in his probably early 50s or late, early 50s, who could arguably play on a side, like in the midfield and in bursts, still show what he used to be able to do.
Come on for the last 20 minutes or something. Yeah.
Something like that. And actually, it was German players back in the day that would often play well into their 30s still, and as strikers and even as defenders, because they still have the brains.
Well, you know, look what we had this week. On Tuesday night, we had Pepe for Porto at 41 years of age, playing not a full game. He played into extra time. He played 120 minutes at 41.
Amazing.
And he played well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've always hated him, but he played well.
Anyway, we'll play a little more, and then we'll wrap this one up for this particular half.
More than me, man. I know.
Let me talk a minute. Now I hear about Artie Lang and how terrific Artie is. So I think, you know what? Maybe it would be a good idea, because guys are doing this, to team up with Artie. Let's see what happens. So I approach you. I'm doing this Borgata gig. And I say, look, Artie, what do you want for the gig? Because I wouldn't want to insult you either. So I throw a number, and you go, you know what? That's fine, because the next night I'm at some club in Pittsburgh, and I'm making X amount, which I wouldn't say on the air. All right, great. So we do the gig. All that happened was a misunderstanding of when you got to pay, okay? I took care of it, but if you don't want to work with me, that's up to you. And if you think I can't do bigger places without you, well, you're mistaken. And if you can do two and three nights at the Borgata and in Vegas and bigger arenas without me, then go do them. I just think you're a good guy. I thought we got along terrific, and I wanted to move forward with it.
Dice, honestly, I would have opened up for you at the Borgata for nothing, just for the story. I really would have. That's how much I respect you. But honestly, the guys team up for those tours because they have trouble selling tickets on their own. I'm blessed with the fact that I'm on a show. And look, 2 years from now, if I'm not on the show anymore, I could be begging guys to give me work. That's how comedy is. But right now, I got to make as much money as I can. And I can do it on my own. And
that's up to you, though. See?
Yeah, he hit the nail on the head. Typically, yes. Unless it's only like certain gigs that they will, you know, co-headline, or they'll two people go out on tour. Like, I think it was Dave Attell and what's his name? The roast guy, Jeffrey Ross. They went on, they did a bit of a tour. Now, I think Dave Attell's physically pretty rickety these days. I think he needs a cane. I'm not sure what his issue is. He's probably still chain smoking fucking Marlboro Reds, but they went on tour for something. And that's because, of course, Jeff Ross is a roaster. I guess he just roasts the audience, but Dave has just brilliant fucking material. I'd kill to see Dave Attell in concert, but they decided let's front load a show with two people, two headliners, as opposed to shittier comic headliner, and see if we can't get more people up. Because it was also like during the pandemic or just past the pandemic. I think they need that extra bit of oomph to get people out and, you know, forego the risk of COVID.
Yeah. And you know, Artie's also sadly prophetic as well when he talks about people are going to be, I'm going to be begging guys for, in a couple of years, he's not going to be begging, you know.
Begging Scott Salem, apparently, for money, for charity, that story.
Yeah. So it's sad. But, God, I could listen to, listening just to Dice talk, you know, his accent and his delivery is so musical.
Yeah.
It's lovely just to listen to.
I always wondered how that came off to people in like English speakers in Europe, and then of course in the UK and the Republic of Ireland. What is this annoying? Is this New York speak? Is it quaint? Is it charming? Does it depend who's doing it? I mean, Marianne from Brooklyn sounds like a cunt in any language. So
yes,
but Dice, for example, or that guy Goody Dickman. There's something endearing about that accent.
Well, it's funny because I was looking at, you know, Wayne, I think, is polarizing, you know, with his accent, I think, with that Boston accent. Some people seem to have, you know, not many, obviously, but some people seem to have an issue with it. But I've never, like, and I thought people would have an issue with my accent, but I think that accent is, I love that accent because it reminds me, maybe it's because of Cheers, you know, but from growing up. Who was the guy with the tash, the postman? Shit.
Cliff,
yeah. It's kind of in that world, you know. But there's accents that really bother me. Australia is one. South Africa sometimes. Yeah, maybe it's just that kind of, I don't know what it is. But Dice is just hilarious.
Anyway, guys, we're going to leave that one we only got a third of it done, but I'm going to go through the next bit of it when I get a chance and make sure there's no dead stuff in there, because the callers start calling in and that's when it also gets really good. And there will be probably a wrap up show. I'll see if that's any good as well. This might be a three parter, but we know we're pretty sure you guys will enjoy it. Any shout outs?
Shout out Liverpool Sunday, Man United. That's my shout out. Got to win.
Yeah.
Come on, you Reds. That's my shout out.
Let's see another 7-0.
Oh God. Can you imagine?
I've already seen the memes.
Yeah. I'm supposed to be going over to Liverpool in a few weeks. The date hasn't been confirmed. So I think it might be a bit emotional. I think what Klopp has done, I think he's the best manager they've had since Shankly, to be honest, when you think of what he's done. Both similar. They came into teams that were just absolutely floating in mediocrity and lifted them up to be hopefully champions again this May.
I think a lot of the pundits have been going on like who's better, da da da. But like it's two different coaches. But I think if you put Klopp in charge of City, they become as successful as they are. And I think if you put Pep in charge of Liverpool at the time, he would get them successful eventually as well. But it would be a very different looking. It's just the style would be quite different, and I don't think it'd be nearly as entertaining. Klopp really did pick the right team.
I think you look when you think about it, Pep has made great teams winners, whereas Klopp has made average teams winners. I think that's the difference. And
yep.
I'd love to see how Pep would get on with a Burnley for a season.
Sure.
I think he'd do well. I think because I think he is a good motivator. I think he is a great manager.
Yeah.
But I think he's always had unlimited money, always. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And that's where you put the asterisks next to the guy and say, well, like, yeah, what could you do with reduced funds? What could you do with a transfer window that you weren't allowed to buy any players? What could you do with, you know, yeah, exactly, a lower rent team like Celta Vigo instead of, you know, Atletico Madrid or some, you know, some team with actual financial backing. And it's what we saw when Liverpool ended up getting Alisson and Van Dijk was, you at some point you do have to break the bank a little bit to get that extra bit of the machine that actually makes everything work that much better.
But whenever they've spent big, they've always spent well, you know,
especially in the last 8 years for certain, most of the time.
But we'll see what happens when Klopp leaves. I had noticed last night our friend Alonso, Xabi Alonso, getting two goals in injury time to win.
Yep.
Which is amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, it's a very Liverpool-esque way to finish your game.
Yeah, fingers crossed. We'll see.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, take care. We love you. I'll see you on the next one.
Thanks, folks.
Oh, just real quick, I was also calling because I just wanted to
Bye. Say
my tour on the 17th of June.
Thanks, Eric. Back. Back. All right, buddy.
Eric, what? I couldn't hear you. What did you say?
I said the tour that I'm
going to... Take care, man. Don't ever call back.